Dr. Arnett, I want to talk about a recent study that was released in March of this year. This study showed basically that mule deer consistently avoid oil and gas development and that the abundance, the size of the herds, decreased by 36% as well as a 45% hunting loss. And this was up near Pinedale, Wyoming, was where it was conducted. Talk about how it differs from previous studies.
The key difference is simply the duration of the study. Most research projects tend to be around 2 or 3 years. That's typically the length of a standard master's student's project or even some PhDs. And it's also linked to policy and management to the extent that the funding and time frame upon which a lot of managers want that science so they can make decisions is in a shorter time frame than some of the science we actually require to elucidate patterns or response of animals. So this one's very unique in that the authors were able to analyze a long-term data set and really confirm some of the things that the original studies that Dr. Sawyer did. There was a common perception that big game animals do habituate to energy development, and this would suggest that there are still long-term effects. And it really also relates to the density, if you will, of the energy development. There's thresholds in everything. We know that there will be short-term impacts with some levels of development and longer-term impacts for more extensive development. So I think these longer-term studies really elucidate what the true effects are over longer periods of time on a population.
I'm wondering if you could give just like a bullet point of some of those long-term impacts.
There's direct impacts from the loss of habitat, but there's also indirect impacts. And this is what's really important, is that with activity associated with a well pad or a wind farm or some other piece of infrastructure out there, there's an effect on the habitat indirectly in that the animals won't necessarily use that habitat at some distance from that structure.
Could that be considered the same as displacement distance?
Correct. Some animals just don't like being around infrastructure. And if there's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of activity, it increases that displacement distance.
Talk about how the carrying capacity is reduced.
All animals are related to the quality and quantity of the habitat that they have available to them. So carrying capacity relates to the ability of that landscape to support a certain number of animals. And when you start taking away that quality habitat or displacing animals away from habitat, it can have a population level impact and actually lower the carrying capacity.
There is something in this study that's called the mitigation hierarchy, and it was developed by the Council on Environmental Quality.
So the key steps in the mitigation hierarchy start with avoidance. And this really begs the question of how well projects are planned in the first place. And it's one of the reasons that my organization and many organizations really promote good upfront comprehensive planning to identify problem areas or environmentally sensitive areas, things like critical winter range for mule deer or migration corridors for these large animals, those kinds of things that can be identified on the front end and then develop strategies to avoid them in the first place. But once a project's put in place, then you can use what's called minimization techniques. And a lot of times that's small-scale type stipulations that regulate the timing and the duration of the activity to minimize the impacts. And then you go into mitigation approaches.
So the third section of the hierarchy, or the third rung of the hierarchy, states that foregoing leasing or reducing the intensity of the development within critical wildlife habitat is the most effective approach to averting population impacts. Can you talk about that?
That's basically saying that there are certain places that shouldn't be leased in the first place. And then once a project is developed and moving forward, the second part of that in terms of minimizing the intensity of the development, that's basically defining some threshold at which the animals don't respond as negatively as they might if you continued to put more wells in the landscape or more wind turbines or whatever the infrastructure might be. Dr. Sawyer has done some studies already that have demonstrated thresholds of development where the animals really don't seem to respond as negatively at lower levels of development as opposed to moderate or higher levels. As you add more, the animals respond more negatively.
Recently, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said that he'd like to see more oil and gas lease sales on Bureau of Land Management lands. And I'm wondering how does that bode for mule deer?
Well, I certainly can't speak for the secretary, but my take on the current direction of increasing the amount of use of public lands, one thing we can tell you is that the BLM does have quarterly lease sales. They're required by law to lease at least some amount of land across the entire ownership. I can also tell you that there are tens of millions of acres of area that's already leased that are not being developed right now, as of today. So to say that we're not using our public lands is a bit of a misnomer and not totally accurate. We are using those public lands for oil and gas development. We're using them for recreation, grazing, all the different varied multiple uses. But one thing that people need to keep in mind is that multiple use doesn't mean every use on every acre. So there are some places that just shouldn't be leased and need to be protected and conserved, and other places where development can be pretty extensive, and everything in between. And that's where it gets interesting, is where you have to try to prescribe different amounts of development, as well as the timing and all of those kinds of things, to minimize the impacts and create a balanced situation where energy, you know, is compatible with wildlife, fisheries, recreation, grazing, all the other uses of the land.
Dr. Arnett, why should the public care about this recent study on mule deer?
Well, I think the public needs to appreciate that our public lands are for all Americans, and they produce all kinds of values, not just energy development, which is significant on our public lands, and we should extract resources from our public lands, but we also should conserve them for future generations, but also recognize the outdoor recreation economy and what these resources like mule deer, pronghorn, elk, and other wildlife species provide to the American people. And the economics are amazing. The most recent Outdoor Industry Association's economic figures suggest that annually, outdoor recreation of all kinds generate $887 million annually and create over nearly 7 million jobs and millions of dollars of tax revenues. So that's an economic output that simply cannot be ignored. So we have to balance that with energy development, grazing, and other agricultural practices, and all the varied uses of our lands that are publicly owned. They are pushing hard on energy dominance, but, you know, this is the kind of science that we have to push back a little bit and say, look, there are impacts. You can't deny it.
Well, Dr. Ed Arnett, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks very much for having me, Amy.